นะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะนะโมตัสสะภะคะวะโตอะระหะโตสัมมาสัมพุทธัสสะพุทธังธัมมังสังฆังนมัสสามิวิสาขปูชา the celebration of the Buddha, like actually different schools of Buddhism have different dates for different things. We Theravadans.Very economical. We have all three days: the birth of the Bodhisattva, the enlightenment, and the Parinibbana on the same day. Some of the Mahayana traditions have them on different days.Which one's right is something we could fight about, except that we're Buddhists. And so we see how to use what we've got. We have a day, just one day, to celebrate the Buddha.Is that enough? It's certainly an occasion, and it's a wonderful opportunity to come to a place like this and gather, see people that we don't usually see, gather with people that we don't usually meet. And consider this wonderful being, this wonderful presence, this wonderful idea, the Buddha. The Buddha, you know, how does that touch your heart? For some of us,it means a great deal. It can bring, just that word can bring tears to the eyes. To have a day when one can actually devote to that contemplation is great. So as I say, I'm pleased to see you here.We usually take the Buddha as the sort of root guru in the Tibetan or the other tradition. The important thing about the Buddha is that he realized for himself. He realized for himself.He had no teacher. We who follow have the advantage of having a teaching to follow. But his remarkable quality was that he awakened.By himself. And so we have stories that are told about how difficult it was to gather together the causes and conditions that would support this realization by a human, this realization of complete truth. We have stories that trace the intention to awaken back to Amaravati, which is where the ascetic Sumedha at the time of the Buddha Dipankara made the determination to realize complete enlightenment for himself as a Samma Sambuddha. And the stories talk of the aeons that intention took to come to fruition. An aeon in Buddhism is a long time. It's many kalpas, and a kalpa's something like the length of time that it takes for a block of granite 16 kilometers square to wear out if once every 100 years a silk handkerchief is dragged across the top. It's a long time. And we are fortunate now, because we have been given the opportunity in this human birth. We have this human form, and we have it at the time when the Buddha's teaching is available, where it's still possible to learn for ourselves that which the Buddha taught. For the realization of the disciple, when a disciple is fully realized, is no different from the realization of the Buddha in terms of quality. Realization of liberation, anyway. The difference is in that the disciple follows. And so we have a sort of recollection of the Buddha that reminds us of that being. We take the day, take this koan day, where the Buddha is born, the Bodhisattva is born, the awakened being is realized, and the final laying down of the human form. And this happens on the same day. And this is a bit of a koan, and I've heard it explained that it is actually like that. That the Bodhisattva, the aspiration to awaken, and the awakening itself, and the laying down of the human form actually does. It happens in the same moment. And that is a contemplation I've found interesting. And often in Thailand you have the figure of the the earth touching, it's called the earth touching Bodhisattva, Bodh Buddha, which is actually just at the moment of enlightenment, or just at the dispelling of the forces of delusion. So there's an argument to say that that figure is actually of a being that is about to be enlightened, because it's at the moment of dispelling the forces of illusion, the forces of delusion, the forces of confusion. I'll leave that and go on to the traditional contemplation of the Buddha. We call him the Lord, the Bhagava, the fully worthy one, the Arahant, Samma Sambuddho. See, there are different types of Buddhas. There are those which awaken, yes, on their own, yes. But the Buddha that we've come to celebrate today was a Samma Sambuddha. He had all the faculties, all the powers that are possible for a human to realize. So he was able particularly to teach those that wish to be taught. He was able to teach. And that quality is there was the only power that the Buddha actually praised and said was worth developing, the power to teach. And this accomplishment, this perfect accomplishment, perfect conduct and understanding that was realized and manifest, made real in his life, was what we have the benefit, this is the legacy that we benefit from today. And when he taught, one of the things that comes up is what he revealed and what he taught was, when you recognize and realize what I've realized, then that is when you see me. Because there was this monk who was very impressed by how the Buddha conducted himself, by how the Buddha looked, how the Buddha appeared, how he wore his robes, how he walked, how he moved. And he said, "Oh, you inspire me so much." And the Buddha turned to him and said, "What? This body? You think you see me when you look at this body with all its imperfections?" He said, when you see what I teach, when you see the Dhamma, then you truly see me. And our teacher here, our more recent teacher, Lumpur Cha, when people used to come to him and say, "You know, I'd really understand all of this, and I'd really be able to be a very good Buddhist if I just had a teacher like the Buddha. No, I just need a better teacher." And we can see ourselves, at least I can see myself also, moving into that mode, wanting a better teacher. And Lumpo Cha used to say, you know, the Buddha is alive today. And that when us Westerners hear that, you know, what it reminds me of is born again Christianity. and it's a slight sort of, oh no, sort of feeling in my mind. But what Lumpo was talking about, Lumpo Cha was talking about, was he was saying that when you see the Dhamma, then you see the Buddha. When you see the Dhamma, then you see the Buddha. And the Dhamma The Dhamma is what Buddhas bow to. It's interesting. The Dhamma is there whether Buddhas realize it or not. The Dhamma is... immanent is the word that Christians use. Sandittiko is the Pali. Present here and now is a poor English approximation. Sandittiko. It's not going anywhere. It's eternal, outside of time, not bound up with the whole way that time traps and weaves. The whole impression that we have of time past, time present, time future. Eternal, it doesn't mean a long time if one actually examines that meaning. It means outside of time, not bound by time. Akaliko, akala, outside the Kala Yuga, outside that which gets eaten and devoured and changes. Akaliko. Ehipassiko. I was talking to somebody yesterday about this. I sometimes translate it as beautiful. It's this idea of attractive. Inviting is sometimes the way that it's translated. Ehipassiko. Something that's encouraging or attractive. A sense of, aha, that's what's happening. And the realization when the Dhamma is encouraging one to do that. And what happens when there is that, aha, that's what's happening. Is that one has been led inwards to a deeper realization. Opanayiko. And one wishes to do that. It's that which, ehipassiko, is that which encourages you to experience that, aha, that's the solution. It's the solution to your problems. And that which encourages you to make that investigation, that which attracts you to make that investigation. Is ehipassiko. The aha experience is open eye echo, meeting inwards, meeting onwards, not leading anywhere really, just allowing that shift of perspective. The one of the analogies that I use is for those of you who know those those magic eye pictures where you have a very peculiar set of patterns, and then if you shift the way that you look at these patterns, a 3D figure comes out. Yes? And it's not that those patterns have gone anywhere. Yes? And it's not that the 3D figure disappears somewhere. But the perspective has shifted. What wasn't seen is recognized in a different way. And it's also a bit of an aha experience. Yes? Oh, that's what. Yeah. It's a very slight analogy as to how insight, vipassana, when that arises, what that's about. It's not that the things disappear or change. It's that the perspective shifts. And developing fluency and skill in that shift of perspective is helpful. For the Dhamma is realizable each wise person for themselves. Pachatangveditabhovinyuhi. And you know how, if you have been looking at those seeing eye things, you know how irritating it is when somebody else sees it and you can't. And there's nothing that they can do. They can make it. There's something you have to know and you have to see for yourself. And the Buddha explained a way to realize what is happening in this human condition. This very, very peculiar experience that we share of growing older, being subject to sickness, and eventually dying. This is what we share. And this is our experience. And all the little twists and tribulations and trials in between all of that, that for each of us is our own experience. You know, we have that much in common. This is where we are, brothers and sisters. We're all getting a little bit older, subject to aches and pains and sickness. And eventually, the body's going to give out. And this is, and the question is, what is happening here? Why? No. Why? And what do we do with this? Very strange experience we've got ourselves into. You see little kids, you know, just trying to figure out what's happening. You see people through their lives, still trying to figure out what's happening. Confused. And the Buddha, the claim of the Buddha is that there is a way of relating to this, there is a relationship that we can cultivate to all of this that will actually lead to the sense of, hey, that's what's happening. I understand. And a sense of ease that comes from that. At least when I understand something, I certainly get a sense of ease. Even if I understand, I don't understand. That's a help. Now this is as much as I can understand. And that's I'm interested in. And the Buddha was certainly, his promise was that he would show and reveal enough so that there need no longer be any confusion about that which is really important. This whole experience of time and space. This whole experience of being somebody stuck in time and space. With growing older, subject to sickness, and eventually the body's going to rot. And getting a perspective on that so that it's no longer a problem, I certainly am interested in. And with the support of the people that I have met over the years, and I have a growing confidence that there is something that we can do about this. Because the Buddhists, what we believe, if we believe anything, is that things happen because of causes. If there are causes and conditions of supporting something, then something will happen. And also, we need to have confidence that what we do, what we say, what we think, is one of the causes that can make a difference to how we experience each moment. When I recognize that, I step a little bit back from my experience and think to myself, what I'd really like is to be happy. I'd really like to be happy. I'd really like to be happy regardless of what's happening. Independent of conditions. And that, when I recognize, when I just touch into that, already I feel a sense of a little bit of ease. I may not at this current moment experience happiness, but somewhere there's something in there that says, I'd like to be happy, I'd like to be at ease. And that's not particularly selfish. It's just, it's not demanding anything happen. to make me happy. It's just wishing myself to be happy. I'm not trying to say, I'll be happy if only I didn't, if only I did, or maybe, because all of that's extra. Behind that, there's something that says, I'd like to be happy. And I don't feel is something unsafe or unhealthy. And I reckon that it's probably common to most beings, even ants and mosquitoes, and probably even other human beings. They're not deliberately out to annoy me. They just want to be happy. And that sort of basis point encourages me to investigate what's happening. Now I have confidence, as I expect most of you do. I have confidence in the Buddha. I have confidence that the Buddha was enlightened. The Buddha was happy all the time. And he led a pretty long and hard life of teaching, from 35 years to 80. And it wasn't something that he undertook as a life, without realizing that it was going to be difficult. He almost didn't bother to teach, is the way the story goes. In oneself, when I look and see within my own experience what awakening means, what Buddha means, what awakening to the truth means, and where the Buddha is within, I certainly notice that sense of, I don't know whether I can be bothered. Now I can notice, maybe, and then I can think, uh-oh, if I work in this area, it's going to be difficult. It's going to take effort. And when the Buddha awoke, he said, well, it's quite lovely. All my problems are over. I don't know whether I'll need to teach. But then something in the universe said, there are those beings with a little dust in their eyes. Please teach. It is possible that they may too realize the cessation of suffering. And within ourselves and within me, now when I do recognize, when I do wake up for a moment, and there is that awakening, this is what's happening. And then there's a sense of, I don't know whether I can be bothered. There's the encouragement is to go on. Because we follow the Buddha. And that which follows the Buddha, that which upholds the Dhamma, that which practices the Dhamma, that's the human face. And the Buddha, what sort of being is the Buddha? Because he didn't describe himself as a man. He didn't describe himself as a god. He described himself as the Tathagata. And there have been essays written about what Tathagata means. The suchness. The thus come one. The thus gone one. And that's just the beginning, I think. And it starts to go on from there. It's that where no footing is found. And that's why somebody like Lumpur Cha can say that the Buddha is alive today, even though he passed into Parinibbana 2,500 years ago. But there is the human face, and the human face is this, is those that have themselves realized. They're the important ones. Those that are practice well, practice directly, practice insightfully. Those accomplished ones, and then that quality. And in your life, in your lives, do you have confidence? Can you gain confidence more and more often that it is possible to train yourself, to learn yourself, to allow the Buddha that you live with if you're willing to open to it. You live with 24 hours a day or beyond time. Is it possible to train? To train for the relationship that actually ennobles and makes one's life worthwhile. Because when the Buddha revealed the middle way, that which is not indulgent and degrading and not profitable, and the middle way between that and that which is just painful, not profitable. When he did reveal the middle way, he talked about relating to our experience in a way that is ennobling, a way that makes life worthwhile. And that's where the first of the noble truths, dukkha, the relationship to that, to know dukkha, to know dukkha, to get really to it, to really understand it, to be very interested in all forms of strain, stress, old age, sickness, death, association with that which one doesn't like, separation from that which one's like, not getting what one wants, and just being fed up. You know, to know the whole gamut of that, really, really fully, so one knows all its facets, is ennobling and worthwhile. It's not masochistic. It's interesting. This is how it works. And then it's also ennobling and worthwhile to relinquish, abandon, to give up that which causes dukkha. That which causes dukkha. That sense of feeling inadequate. The sense of not having enough. The sense of not being complete. The sense of frantically searching. The sense of being thirsty. One relinquishes the causes of dukkha. Relinquishes them, puts them down. And that's worthwhile and ennobling. Leads to a sense of a life that's ennobled and worthwhile. And then realizing, making real, making something that's actually present for one. The cessation of dukkha. To make that nirodha. Something that's real, not something that's pretend, not something that's fake or not complete. But making as real as possible, realizing the cessation of dukkha, which is that sense of being able to relinquish the sense of having put down, the sense then of being fulfilled, the sense of having enough. And this is one of the ways that we begin that practice is generosity. Because in order to be generous, you have to feel that you've got enough. And in that little act of just putting a little bit of rice into the bowl, you have to feel you've got enough rice. If you didn't feel you had enough rice to give it away, then you'd want to keep it. No, but if you just practice that, just that much, practicing having enough is already, you're practicing being a fulfilled human being. No? And so, and that's why to do it often is so important, to keep doing it. That's why it's really nice to see little kids doing it. It's really nice to see kids giving away something that they like. It's interesting. They got a plate of sweeties. And there's But then when they do it, oh, do they feel good about themselves? Do they feel great? And you know, that lasts much, much longer than the sweeties. Yeah? The sense of feeling good about yourself last much longer. It's ennobling. It's actually truly worthwhile. And that's practicing the cessation of suffering. No, that's Nirodha, making it real in your life. And now, because the fourth and noble truth, you've got this complicated and the fourth noble truth, to relate to that in a way that's ennobling and worthwhile. You develop it, you grow it, you cultivate it, you keep digging at it, you keep growing it, you keep developing it. If you want to do anything, if you want to become anything in this life, as a Buddhist, because becoming isn't very, what you grow in Buddhism is the Eightfold Path. Those of you who are into gardening, or those of you who are into bodybuilding, or those of you who are into self-improvement, the thing to grow is the Eightfold Path. Practicing this idea of perfect perspective. Perfect perspective, sammāditti. That's the key. The perspective that actually recognizes that, hey, on a mundane level, there is the result of good, and there is the result of doing unskillful things. There is birth, there is death. There are devas, there are enlightened beings. The Buddha was enlightened. This perspective as a practice is actually something that you need to grow, because it may not happen immediately. And on a mundane level, that's what perfect perspective is about. On a supramundane level, it's to do with insight into the Four Noble Truths, which is a bit peculiar because one of the Four Noble Truths is already the Eightfold Path. But that's where the ratchet is. But on the mundane level, to also grow sammāditti. Sammāditti, perfect perspective. What I do, what I say, what I think makes a difference is one of the things of, one of the aspects of sammāditti. There is karma. There is the result of karma. And then you see, there's a willingness to practice sammāsaṅkappa. A balanced, perfect, appropriate intention. Not to harm others. Not to exploit. Not to do other people down. And again, one grows this. The thing about growing, as the gardeners will tell you, and Lumbo Cha used to say, is once you've planted something and you want to grow it, you don't keep pulling it up to see how far it's gone. How much it's grown. Your responsibility is to keep it watered, keep it manured, keep it free from weeds, and let it do the growing. It'll grow in its own pace. And what you're into growing is the Eightfold Path. So you grow your perfect speech, your appropriate speech, your appropriate actions, your appropriate livelihood. Now you grow them, so it's something that you're moving with in that sort of organic, maybe GM forced, I don't know, that sort of natural way. It's with that sort of intention. So you're not forcing it. You're growing your speech, you're growing your actions, you're growing your livelihood in a way that's appropriate and balanced. And your effort, you're cultivating. Your effort, particularly the right effort, is to abandon those things that are unwholesome. Again, this idea of cultivating by getting rid of the weeds. Yeah, because the first of the right efforts is actually to abandon that which is unwholesome. Then you can go on to cultivating that which is wholesome and developing that, and which one already has, and then one guards against cultivating that which is unwholesome, which one doesn't have, and then one tries to cultivate that which is wholesome, which one doesn't have. Four signs of right effort or appropriate effort. And then one cultivates the samma sati and samma samadhi, the mindfulness and the continuity of that intention. One grows those. One develops those, cultivates those. That's the bhavana. And with growing confidence, one hopes. That's one encourages oneself in a life that is worthwhile, or a life that is ennobling and supportive of that which leads to peace. Because the Dhamma is that which leads to a sense of peace and a sense of ease. It may be difficult, but this long-term its deep result is actually peaceful. And it's what's realized by the Buddha. What's realized by the Buddha, what's taught by the Buddha. It's what's realized by wisdom, what's taught by wisdom. And then the qualities of wisdom are something that we all have some access to. That quality we have some access to. That quality that's actually willing to awaken to what's going on right now. Now for me, is what grows in terms of the historical Buddha is an increasing and sense of gratitude that this being 2,500 years ago, the exact details of whose life I'm not 100% sure of. I'm not 100% sure that he was born as a human being, enlightened as a Buddha, and realized Parinibbana all on the same day. I'm not 100% sure of that. But I'm really, really grateful that those events did take place, and I'm pretty sure that they did in my heart. I have that confidence. And I'm really, really grateful that this being decided to teach for 45 years in what must have been incredibly difficult circumstances. He walked most places. He didn't have a good, easy set of disciples all the time. He continued to teach. He put up with an awful lot. And he didn't need to. For him, his problems were over. And yet he revealed something that is still of relevance today. It still speaks to the human condition in a way that is relevant. This interest in humans to find out what's going on. This interest in humans that, you know, I wish myself well. And the best way that I feel that I can truly wish myself well is to cultivate an ennobling attitude towards the Four Noble Truths. To know dukkha, to abandon the causes, to realize the cessation, and to practice the path. And that is sufficient. The Buddha just taught what was sufficient. Just a handful of leaves out of the forest. And he offered them to us. And I'm very grateful for that. And if any of this consideration this afternoon has been of any use to you, then please do make use of what you can. If you have questions afterwards, I'll be happy to consider them and see if I could help a little more. But if anything has not been of any use to you, just leave it behind. No worries. Won't feel insulted. Thank you very much, Yvonne.